Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everybody, the show's about to begin, but before we get started, here are some words from our newest sponsors.
No matter what you do in the bathroom to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. They have amazing shower stuff, hair styling products, toothbrushes, and toothpaste, and of course, razors and shave supplies.
I use these products every day, George. The Amber and Lavender Body Wash is how I start my morning off. I get my body all nice and smooth, and then I switch over to the Big Cloud Good Shake Hand Cream. I love that stuff. But that's how I get ready. You're not me. You have to have your own way to get ready. You might shave your whole body to get ready for a bike race. Dollar Shave Club's Executive Razor and Shave Butter can help with that. You might do your hair to get ready for a soccer match. Boogies by Dollar Shave Club can help with that. It can get your style on point. The thing is, no matter what you do to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need.
And right now, you can get ready with an amazing deal on any one of their starter sets. I recommend the Daily Essentials starter set because I love Amber Lavender Body Cleanser. That's right. I love it. But you can't go wrong with any of them. Head over to the dollarshaveclub.com/junkie to pick up your own DSC starter set for just $5. After your starter set, products ship at a regular price. And make sure you check out their new video, too. That's dollarshaveclub.com/junkie, dollarshaveclub.com/junkie.
This is your captain speaking. We are making our descent into Las Vegas McCarran Airport. On behalf of our crew, we'd like to thank you for flying MMA Junkie Airlines. Now please fasten your seatbelts and put your tray tables in your upright position because the descent is going to be a little bit bumpy.
All right, Junkie Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. All night long, we rollin'! Yes!
The MMA Junkie Radio revolution is upon us.
Can you dig it?
There's no escape.
No escape.
Through the vast frontier of cyberspace and through a sea of stars in outer space.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
We've solidified our combat communication stranglehold.
We are controlling transmission.
With the use of MMA Junkie Radio and Sirius XM satellite radio technology.
MMA Junkie Radio, commence transmission.
Live from MMA Junkie Radio HQ in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Here are your hosts, Gorgeous George and Goz.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Race and Sportsbook, we are the MMA Junkie Radio team. That's John Morgan on the far right, the infamous Goz. To my immediate right, the fight analyst Dan Tom. To my left and back east, producing as always, Danny Otto. What's up, guys?
What's up? We don't matter no more or what?
We matter. We all matter. Right. Look, we matter, bitches.
Man, he threw me
Five-time winners of Best Media Source. We got a Journalist of the Year. We were a nominated radio show. So, yeah, we matter, motherfuckers. All right, guys, let's get into it, man. I know there's football and soccer, and we'll get to that. But on Saturday, we got what we wanted. We had been fiending for a few weeks of some UFC action, and they made us wait. I think it was like 3 weeks in between cards. But, man, when we got to it, it was really, really fun to get back in that groove. And the main event delivered. Justin Gaethje, back in the win column, defeats James Vick, first-round stoppage. React, guys. John Morgan?
I thought the whole card delivered, to be honest with you, man. It was one of those ones that I liked so many of the fights going in. And you always hate to do the cliche thing. Oh, it's the cards that nobody's paying attention to. But if you looked into it and you dug into it, you're like, dude, there's a lot of fights on here that are good, that mean something, that you know. And sure enough, man, I thought the card delivered start to finish, man. It was a fun night.
Mm-hmm. And it ended with a vicious KO, and I mean, really vicious. you were there, mm-hmm. so I want you to tell us, as we go to a commercial, as we see backflips and front flips and backflips galore, they were tending to James Vick, and I heard, I think, Paul Felder say, when Gagey came over, probably if you're counting, maybe a minute later, 90 seconds later, after all that, after all the high fives, James even went in for a single? Like, he was that out of it.
No, I mean, it was probably longer than that, to be honest with you. I mean, he was down for a couple minutes, you know, and then they got him up on the stool, and he was very wobbly on the stool. And yeah, it's funny, because I went back and watched the broadcast as well, because I wasn't sure if anybody picked up on that. And yeah, it was crazy to see, man. Like, that's how out of it Vic was, is that he walked over to him to just kind of give him the old, like, hey, you know, much respect, that sort of thing. And Vic, like, reached forward and, like, wrapped around him and shot a takedown, like, off the stool, man. So it was like, yeah, you could tell that for a while he wasn't there. I think even you see it sometimes, man. Even as the guy's walking past press row, he's just kind of out of it. You can see the kind of glazed over look in the eyes, man. So it was tough. And you know, I had talked about it earlier in the week during there. I mean, James Vick has awful weight cuts. I mean, bad weight cuts, just the way he looks. But it's weird. Like, we talked to him the day before on Thursday at the media day, and he was still dripping sweat. You know what I mean? So you could see he wasn't dehydrated. Water was running out of him. He had just come from the sauna. But he is bone thin, man, and just I don't know. I mean, he has said in the past that, you know, he's thought about going to 170, but he feels like he'd have to drop so far down the line where he was right up at the top of the ladder. I do wonder.
81, right? Going into that.
So I do wonder if maybe this loss will make him think, well, look, now I'm back down the ladder. You know, maybe 170 is a better spot for me, because I just feel like there's so many fighters these days that are finding out, like, you know, James Krause on the same card, who's like, yeah, I was kind of worried to go to 170, to be honest with you. I feel so much better. He's like, I feel more athletic. My mind is more clear. Everything works when I haven't put my body through this horrendous weight cut. So I felt bad for James, because, you know, he's worked so hard to get where he was in this opportunity. And he said, man, I feel like I didn't get those opportunities along the way. So then to come up short and to lose in devastating fashion, I mean, that drops him way down the scale. But maybe this will be what it takes for him to move to 170.
That, what do you think goes?
That takedown attempt that he had was like
post-fight?
Yeah, like a minute and a half, maybe even 2 minutes mm-hmm. after the actual knockout. So for him to still even be like that, and he had been on the stool with people in front of him for a while, so that tells you just like how out of it he really was. Then he had time to come over to you, Justin Gagey. And I was thinking, as soon as I see a fighter ever go in John's direction, I always think staff picks. What did we do? Because a lot of times they'll come out and I told you so. Is that what came out of his mouth?
So here's what happened. So Justin, I get to the hotel on Wednesday. My room's not ready yet, so I just go into the press room to hang out and work from there. And Justin comes into the press room, and we were supposed to talk later that day, but he had some other media stuff going on. He goes, picking James. He's like, John Morgan, picking James Vick. And I was like, our picks weren't even out yet. So, like, I don't know. I think I had done some other interviews, and we had talked about it or whatever. But he's like, John Morgan, picking James Vick. He's like, I'm going to knock him out just for you. Just for you, I'm going to knock him out. And, like, it was funny because there was, like, a room full of, like, PR people. And I think all of us were trying to get a read. Like, is he actually angry, or is he just kind of playing around a little bit? And then when I interviewed him later, like, he'd been giving really good interviews all day. And he wasn't bad to me, but he didn't really, like, give me the greatest interview ever. And so I was like, I think maybe he really does have, like, a chip on his shoulder. And then sure enough, man, so the cameras only caught part of it, because I did go back and check the broadcast, because I got hit up on Twitter. I'm like, I wonder what they showed. The cameras only caught part of it. Like, during the commercial when they were showing the highlights, Justin came up to me even before that and was, like, pointing to me. He's like, you see? Your boy over there. I put him to sleep. Just like I put him to sleep. I was like, oh. Okay. Like, <I'm
laughs> John, what made you go with James? Was it a little Texas love? Was it you know, was it a coin flip and you just went with the Lone Star State? Or
straight up, it was a coin flip to me, and there was some Texas love there for sure, man. I like James, and but I did think that he had a path to victory. I thought he had to fight a pretty much a perfect fight to do it, and I thought he was having some success early. You know, he was using the teep,
good
using the kicks,
and body.
Touched the liver up a little bit. Yeah, and I thought that he was going to be able to do that, to be honest. And here, I'll be honest with you. You know, we turn our staff picks early on Monday, right? Trying to get it done so everybody has time.
Morocco does it on Thursday, actually.
Of course. As the week wore on, I actually started to lean the other way, because here's what I really thought was going to happen is Justin had been told so many times, like, dude, you can't keep fighting like this. You got to rely on your wrestling. You got to rely on your wrestling. And I thought he would, and I figured this would be a bad opponent to do that against, because James has, like, really good chokes from that position. And I thought that basically that's what would end up happening. But then as I kept hearing through the week, you know, interviews with me and interviews with other people, you could hear it on Justin's mind. He's like, he said it specifically on media day. He was like, this is not the fight for me to stick my neck out and risk getting choked. And as soon as those words came out of his mouth, I was like, oh, he gets it. He's not going to change. He's going to fight the same way. And if he kept that same forward pressure and kept that same, like, I thought that was the better scenario. But I thought so many people have been harping on him about you can't fight that way anymore, that he was going to turn to his wrestling and it was going to end up being a mistake. And so I'll be honest with you, by fight time, I was leaning Justin Gaethje, but you know, the picks are in at that point. By that time, Justin had already called me out, so I had to ride with my boy James.
So you picked James too?
I did.
Did you, Dan, or did you?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So the four of us did.
Yeah. Oh,
four
wow.
of us have to eat crow today. I did it for a couple reasons. One of them was just rest. I feel like Justin just hasn't had rest. Even going all the way back to Ultimate Fighter, like, that's a time where you're supposed to kind of be resting. Nope. I mean, it's been nonstop. And James,
13 months, four fights.
James is always dialed in. He always says the right things. And I just felt like it really was his moment. And walking out, he was even saying, like, this is my – I think that might have weighed on him a little too much, I think.
How about you, Dan?
Yeah, man. The first thing I thought was like, oh, well, I definitely got to eat crow on that one. But, I mean, my breakdown, it was a coin flip fight. I mean, even, the last sentences, I'm pretty sure it says, you know, it's going to go either one of two ways unless Gaethje can corral Vic to the fence real early, like within the first, not just the first round, but within like the first 3 minutes of the first round. That's going to be his best bet. It'll be a short night for James. If not, then James is going to pull away because, you know, he has those front attacks from the kicks to the knees. Uppercuts, which he didn't really get going, but we've seen those work on Gaethje, and I was just like, man, you know, Vic throws everything that's like we've seen trouble Gaethje. I had a hard time seeing with that. And if you notice for me, if it's kind of a pick where the dynamic of the matchup is, you know, this guy real early, but if, you know, this guy, you know, a little bit later, a lot of times I'll lean with that guy unless he's shown chin issues, but, you know.
I felt like as I was watching, I know we didn't get to watch a lot of the fight, mm-hmm. but that James was being too willing to back up to the fence mm-hmm. and not get out back to, because when he was in the middle and he can use that reach and that range to his advantage, that's when I thought he had some success landing a couple of the kicks to the body. So, yeah, it just didn't set up well early. But props to Justin Gaethje, man. I mean, dude, that was a devastating right hand, as we said. I mean, the aftermath was there, and then man, the celebration was A+ afterwards, you know.
Oh, he's nutty with that.
I always get scared when people do that.
How fast does he do it? Like, he literally KOs Vic, and like 2.5 seconds later, he's already up and doing the back. Like, there's no time for anyone to stop him if they wanted to.
Well, his awareness is crazy. Like you almost see a trigger, like, oh, their commission's coming in. I better get this
better
in
get
really quick.
Yeah.
And with the John thing, it's funny. I got
in trouble with that with the commission one time.
Yeah, but like, even with the John thing, like, he did the same thing to Felder. Like, literally, he's fighting. You got to imagine there's warm-ups. Yeah, I'm sure there's monitors back there, but I don't know how much volume those guys are getting. They're sharing a room. But amidst all this chaos, he's the main event. He picks up the one time in a, you know, 13 fight broadcast that Paul Felder, in a throwaway fashion, amongst saying other things, kind of goes, oh, I mean, of course I'd fight him too if I had the opportunity. I'd fight either of these guys. But, you know, and he kind of, it was a real just sidebar of what was being set up. Somehow Gaethje picks that up amongst everything, keeps it in his head, and flows it into what we saw in the post-fight interview to give Felder a jab. And I was like, man, this guy does not forget. Like, and even when he came in here, like, you know, I pick a lot against a lot of fighters. We interview a lot of fighters. That's not an abnormal dynamic. You guys are much more used to it, obviously. I'm more new to it. But, man, the one person I felt like, this guy's staring daggers into me. I'm like, did he read my breakdowns back in the day?
I
didn't pick against him one time?
The funniest thing ever, man, and I told the story a couple times this week because people heard Justin calling me out, but, you know, we didn't do picks for years and years and years. And finally, you know, it was basically USA Today that was like, you guys got to start doing picks. Like, you have to. And I remember, you know, Dan and I used to say, nah, man, we don't want to do that. All right, well, we got to. And I was like, you know what, man? Nobody's ever going to see it anyway. Like, the first week, bro, the first week was – maybe the second week was over in Macau, and it was Tyron Woodley knocking out Dong Young Kim. When Dana had been saying repeatedly, Tyron Woodley tends to choke in these big situations. Remember, that was a narrative for a while. And we get to the post-fight press conference, and I'm like, Tyron, I'm like, now that you got Dana standing right next to you, I was like, do you believe this is proof that you don't choke in those big situations? He's like, you know what I know? I know that you picked the wrong guy.
and you didn't pick the wrong guy, right?
No, I didn't. No, I had picked him.
See, bank that. The next time we see Woodley, bank that one and bank the story about Haran and Woodley. Remember we talked about it the other day?
Yeah.
Where he thought we were out of line when yet it was his bad.
I
want to have him in studio and we want to cover all these. It's so much more fun when they're there.
I'm thinking of guys that have done that to me and he's one that got me. But I did pick against him. I remember yours. You didn't.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't. I picked you.
But let me white knight for us for a little bit, just because what you were saying, like, the four of us got our pick wrong, but I didn't feel bad about it because you're right. Up until the moment, I thought Vic was actually fighting a pretty good fight.
Yep.
I think he was using the distance to his advantage, although it seemed like maybe that was a strategy for a five-round decision because I just didn't know if he was going to be able to lay Justin out with what he was throwing. Right. You're right. He was going backwards a little bit. He was fighting well. I feel good about the pick. I didn't think Justin Gaethje could close the distance like that.
That was amazing.
That was a wicked shot. And if you look at his eyes, you probably couldn't see that the night you were there, but when you went back and saw the replay, he was out before he even hit the ground. And his eyes were just glazed over.
And I want to white knight even further because Vic was 8-1 in the UFC alone. Justin Gaethje was 1-2 in the UFC alone. Justin could make the case, hey, I was winning those fights. But, again, we look at – I mean, the result also stands – so I don't think we were that out of line. Plus, the odds makers didn't offend Gaethje. I mean, he was this considerable underdog. And we have to stand here and make a pick. It just so happens all four of us did the same thing. But there's some that are really, really close. Yeah. You know what I mean? And we'll gladly eat the crow on Monday. Hopefully the fighters understand that. But it's not like we picked his name out of a hat. I mean, coming to the UFC, he had a couple struggles.
Right.
That overhand right hadn't really been seen as much. I mean, it was really picture perfect. His kicks weren't landing. Vic was doing a good job of backing out the little space he needed to because of the reach and distance he had established. So had that not hit, it just would have been interesting to see how it played off. But the same way I can't say had it not hit, it was going Vic's way, Gaethje has to understand, hey, okay, it was going your way, but at the end, what's the result? Because that's what he would tell us. What was the result? Well, that's what we would say back to him. Well, we look at the rankings. Gaethje's been in there for many years as a WSOF / PFL guy.
One of the only
guys. I don't even think he was PFL. Honestly, I think he was gone by the time they switched their name.
Yeah.
But we gave him his respect there, and he's hung in there despite the losses because we also know he's been up against killers. Poirier and Alvarez, there's nothing wrong with losing to those guys, especially when you fight the way he has. So, you know, I want to actually double down on what we've done. The stat picks, I actually want to say, put our pictures next to it. We'll man up wherever we see these guys. What are they going to do? You know what I mean?
I wouldn't go that far.
But I don't think they can take it that serious.
Easy, George. Easy.
What are they going to do? I mean, that's our job. The same way your job is to fuck somebody up. Well, our job is to pick a winner. Somebody calls into the show and goes, what do you think? This is what we think. And if we were that good at it, we wouldn't be hosting. We'd be gambling. Right? Sitting in our mansions and not worrying about it.
But somebody hit me up on Twitter and they were like, I've seen your record, John. He should be glad you picked against him.
We're all positive, that's for sure. And I'm always in the basement, but we're always picking more winners than losers. Some you think are actually, easy ones. But even Anders, over 1,000. He had his hands full with Williams. We'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But lastly, John, just to finish out Gaethje Morgan talk, is that why he gave you a little bit of problem with that, your use of the word stagger?
I think so. I admit it afterwards. Maybe I picked the wrong word. I stand by what I said. Like, when he hit those two left kicks in a row to the it looked like one of them, like he paused for just a second, like, oh, did that get me? Like, it touched the liver just a second. And then he even, like, pats his own belly to be like, nah, man, that didn't get me. Yeah. So that's what I thought. They're like, it's like when guys smile when they get hit in the chin. They're like, oh, that didn't hurt. They're like, well, if you just took the time to smile, it probably did hurt. So I said the same thing. And then, that's when he's, you've never been hit. And then that's when all the keyboard warriors come out and be like, you've never trained a day in your life. I'm like, well, I did. You're right. It's been a long time, and I'm 40 years old now. But I have trained, and I have sparred, and I have been hitting the liver. So, but, it is what it is, man. So, it was funny. The whole week I was like, is he just messing with me? Is he really pissed at me? But at the end of the day, it doesn't impact me from being able to do my job. And, we're here to cover the sport, not to make friends. But I like Justin. I've always liked Justin. He's a dude who's – I mean, I've been one of his biggest fans as well, man. I remember in the World Series days, I'd tell anybody, like, you better tune in. Like, oh, I don't watch World Series. Okay, well, you're screwing up if you miss this guy, man. He is must-watch television. So, if he is mad at me, that sucks. But it is what it is. We got to go about and do our job, right?
Hey, positive note on that. My liver shot, I remember my worst one was, it's his birthday today, Ryan Couture. Happy birthday, Ryan Couture. Mm. It's his birthday today. And the best part of the fight for me, guys, not just the right hand by Gaethje, which is very Trevor Whitman-esque, way he throws away a shot and comes back with another. Rose kind of did a similar thing, different combination to Yan Jacek. But I love it because you had that, Bisping Perillo moment at the end, if you guys saw those replays where Gaethje hits a knockout and it's right in the corner in the foreground. And it kind of like that, but everybody's like, the corner's going crazy. And Trevor Whitman, just like a Jedi Master, is like, my Padawan did good, you know? It was great.
By the way, great moment. I do want to say, I did briefly in my head think to tell Justin, like, bro, my liver gets tested every day of the week, man. But I was like, you know what? I'm just going to leave.
And you've staggered out of a few bars.
Definitely staggered. My liver has been staggered, I'll tell you that.
Guys, what's next?
John's liver going, bullshit, when you heard that. Like, John's liver would step up and say, that guy's out of
line. Check yourself before you wreck yourself.
What's next for Justin Gagey, guys? What do we do with this guy? Oh, well, he did say, I need time off.
A little time off.
But you can give me the winner of, you know, as an opponent for Gagey, or do you want to just let it go for a while since we do have some other matchups?
I think I'll let it roll for a little bit. Now, just, I don't know if you could hear from the audio in the back, but when he said I need a little time off, Ali Abdelaziz was in the back, and he said 6 months, which is why I was like, does 6 months sound right? So I don't think Justin wants to be, you know, Justin was like, I don't know about that. So I don't think he wants to be out that
long. Because it was so
long.
Quick.
Yeah.
Well, and if he gets to that business meeting, and at that business meeting, Dana White goes, Kevin Lee needs an opponent.
So two great things that were said there. Number one, somebody, one of the other journalists that was there, was like, so, I mean, you said you only have five fights left. Does that mean you only have four left? He's like, no, I have five wars left.
Right.
That didn't count. So I thought that was kind of cool. So we know we may get Gaethje a little bit longer. But, you know, the business meeting, what he said, I mean, he didn't say it in so many words, but, yeah, he made it pretty clear.
I loved how he said it, too.
I want to know what I'm making up front. I don't want the win bonus. You know what I mean?
I've proven it. I got equity. I have good credit in terms of with the fans. They know I'm going to deliver. He's 100% right.
He's 100% right. I agree with him,
That's
man.
How you and, go into and, a negotiation.
And I think if he can say, look, man, I have shown you every time out, man, win or lose, I'm going to put on a show, man. Fans know what they're going to get. So just pay me what I deserve to get paid. And then tell other people, hey, if you want guaranteed paychecks, fight like him. You know? And I wholeheartedly support that. I think that if anybody on the roster deserves to get 100% guaranteed money every time, it's him. It's him.
And for all the wars people say he's been in, he was spot on with his post-fight interview. And even beforehand, as he was walking back and forth with the fight, he had this look. He looked at the camera. He walked the camera down. The post-fight that he had with the guys, anything he did pre-fight, that guy's got all his marbles. He's got his college degree that he says he wants to put to use after the five wars. And I really like the way he's kind of embraced just reality. He used to tell us in the WSOF days, I know I'm going to lose. Why am I going to sweat it? And what happened after he lost? He didn't sweat it. You know, he had a couple fights. Yeah, he's banking bonuses. And I think quickly, depending on the matchup, he could be right back in the mix. And I'd love to see him and Kevin Lee. I know it'll be too soon, but how about one with Kevin Lee? And then he can take that extended time off. I don't know.
And you touched on it, man. It's going into it. He repeated it over and over. But it's funny how you look at things. You know, you can either look at it as he was 1-2 in the UFC, or as he kept saying over and over, I was winning fights against the absolute best. And then it just didn't go my way at the end, you know what I mean? But it's not like he got blown out in either one of those fights. I mean, those were great fights. So, yeah, the dude's got some – I mean, he's still right there. Even with those losses, he's still right there.
How about Vic, guys? He goes to 8-2 now in the UFC. A lot of people are giving him crap because of how boisterous he was. But I can appreciate that style of promoting your fights. Sure, there's a lot of crow to eat. Sure, he feels like crap. Sure, his social media, he's getting bombed. But had he won, the leaps and bounds you take as a trash talker, as a promoter of yourself, are unmatched versus the ones that let the sport dictate what you're going
to
do.
To me, it's just like James Gallagher. It's just like James Gallagher. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. If you want to stand up and clap and be like, I hated your attitude and I'm glad you lost, that's fine. But don't hate the guy for doing – that's the era that we're in right now, man.
Right.
You have to do this to get noticed, to get recognized, to get people interested. You have to. It's part of the game. So if you want to say, hey, man, I was happy to see James Vick lose because I didn't like his attitude, fine. But don't be like, and I hate the guy, and he's this, and he hasn't, and you have no right. What do you mean you have no right? I mean, it's the blueprint for making money. It's right. The reason he got this opportunity.
Yeah, I hope he stands by it. I hope he shakes it off soon, and he gets back – gets back in there and fights somebody soon. He does have a decision to make. He's got a good run of 8-2 at 55, and he needs to huddle up with those that are closest to him. Those are the ones that see him suffer, you know, because there's a lot of things you say when you're suffering. Don't ever let me do this again, you know. If it's one of those, then maybe he needs to move up to 70. Maybe this is the time.
Take one and see how you feel.
But if not, if he feels like 8-2 didn't knock him down too bad, then that's fine. But take some time off to rest the brain. Because let me say this. Mm-hmm. You talk about the frontiers of – you ever hear like outer space, it's unexplored. And then there's other people who go, outer space, the ocean. You know, there's depths of the ocean. Dude, the brain is fascinating too. Why is it that some people can remember every word you've said? Or there's some people that can say the word you said backwards? There's people that can be in wars and take all kinds of shots. And then there's some people that can get clipped one time and that can be it. I mean, it's really fascinating. And I want these fighters, not just James Vick, every single one, to always look out after themselves. I'd love to know what the standard cost is for one of those exams that shows how you did on any types of testing that they gave you 6 months earlier. Are you matching those? Are you good? You know, or did you take a step back? What do we need to look into? Because that's not just your livelihood with your career. He just had a kid, man. I'd love for him to hold his kid and take him to school and help him with his homework. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I actually want to now I'm going to ask the next time we have someone from American Top Team, whether it's a coach or a fighter. They're good about incorporating a lot of like vestibular therapies, like stuff that I had to do when I came back from my concussion. Yeah. Well, that's like the Simon bop it, skip it, whatever. They light up and you hit it.
Quinta does.
And yeah. They're showing that now in the embeds. And now the question is, I know they're implementing that, but that like what George said, are they tracking that between fight camp to fight camp? Are you getting better? Or are you stagnating? Or are you, you know, God forbid, getting worse?
Is it available at the PI?
It is available at the PI as well.
They should all do
there
it.
You go.
Yeah. Just like we want to know in the last 6 months, is your blood work good to go? Not just for yourself, but for your opponent. Is your brain, you know.
Well, I just put it in my notes. I'll follow up. Because for the longest time, you know, the LaRuvo Brain Institute would do all that stuff for free. And I can tell you the answer to the question. It's expensive. Those tests are not
cheap. Are we talking about hundreds or thousands?
Thousands.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we talking like
1,500 to 2,000, which is probably more than most fighters want, especially a guy making 10 and 10. But the LaRuvo Brain Institute used to do all that stuff for free as long as you volunteered for their study. To be honest, I haven't heard about it in a long time, but that is because, you know, you used to have the commissioner before every meeting would just say, hey, I'd just like to take a moment to say, please participate. I need to follow up with them and see if they're still doing that. I imagine they are. I mean, that was supposed to be a years-long study.
That's a good one. I'm sorry. I was going to round it back to James Vick and something you mentioned about the water, though. What you touched on is some I'm even like recognizing from my day to day is I'm not drinking enough water and how that, you know, affects my cognitive. I mean, you know, you guys are having to speak, John, speak, write, edit. You know what I'm saying? We're having to use our cognition, so it's not like we don't have a means to track or a sample size, an active sample size about it. And you know, when I had my concussion, even I didn't think it was a hard shot, but what I contributed was I was already kind of, you know, not restricting water or trying to, but restricting diet. And a lot of times guys end up dehydrating themselves. And I remember I played 18 holes that day, and I was drinking water, but I wasn't drinking enough water. And you go into sparring that night, and you're like, oh, I'm dehydrated, and how that can affect you. And the reason I'm bringing that up is, you know, if James Vick does want to stay at lightweight, you know, he's admitted himself that he's dieted badly. I believe I saw one of John's interviews this week. He admits that himself. You know, and I'm not sure if that would solve it, but he has to at least address that, I think, if he wants to stay there. Because when you look at it, it's not just guys getting knocked out, the disturbing. You, how many people you see knocked out, John? But how are you reacting earlier? It was, you know.
It was a rough one.
It's because when it's a delayed reaction, whether it's the scream, the you know, like the Tahuna. I think Tahuna's last knockout was a real bad one. Those delayed reactions, that's the scariest part. And that makes me think, you know. Again, this is only his second knockout. He did have some Golden Glove experience, so I don't know how much concussion, concussive blows Vic has taken, but he doesn't have a record that shows it, so it's just something to think about, you know, for health-wise.
Right. Well, our country and the world in general usually reacts after a tragedy, and I don't want that, guys. That's pretty cool that 25 years we've never had – I shouldn't use the word just cool, but you know what I mean?
Right.
That's impressive that in 25 years we haven't had a death in the UFC or any form of a major paralysis in the UFC. And in other sports that are contact sports, that has not been the case. So why not get ahead of it? Especially when the president tells the whole world that they're worth $7 billion. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there has to be some money out there that's allocated in a certain way, especially when that pay-per-view is now $64.99. You know, I mean, there are other streams of revenue that they've gotten. Look out for those people that are under your umbrella, your immediate umbrella, the 500 that are out there. And not all of them might need it. Some come out the winner that – their head may not have even been rattled. You know, Justin may not have even been rattled. But still, I still believe that it would be a good thing. I think they could learn from the NFL on that one.
Definitely do the tests, and I think he will do them. But I have a feeling he's going to stay at 155. I think you look at the punch, and you first thing I would do is look at it and go, well, how many other guys on this roster would go out to that punch?
I think a lot
of them would.
Yeah.
So then it comes down to what you guys are talking about, like how bad was that cut actually for him? I know he loves being that bigger guy at the division, so I think he'll stay at 155, but definitely time off and tests.
Well, stature-wise, he'd actually still even be one of the bigger guys at welterweight, too. So it's there if he wants it. And you know what? How about, remind me, guys, out of Chiesa, Iaquinta, and Vic, who are the guys that despise each other, and who are the guys that are homies?
Out of who? Chiesa?
Vic, Chiesa,
Iaquinta and
Iaquinta.
Iaquinta and Chiesa are pretty cool, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So I think Chiesa, he wants to test 70, and so does, and so maybe a Vic wants to as well. Why not match both of those guys up at 70? Just to keep them busy. Right now, they're out of the you know, being contenders or whatever at 155 pounds. So why not just have those two maybe have a 170 battle? You see how when Felder fought Mike Perry, that didn't injure his stock at 155. He can still come back to 155 and do his thing. He fought Perry under the circumstances, you know, because cards getting reshuffled or whatever. I think maybe Chiesa and Vic could do that at 170. And let's just see how it goes, and that gives them an opportunity to just test their body, see how they feel. I think the fight will matter either way. I'm sure the winner might want to stay at welterweight until he loses. You know, you're playing with house money at that point. And then the loser either gets that reality check. Wow, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I want to dance with in this weight class. I want to go to a lower weight class, or I want to go back to 155. But maybe a matchup like that might make sense.
It, you know, that's true. And the UFC is a precedence of doing that, right? Like, whether it's just straight-up matchmaking where there's no short notice or funny business. But I almost get mad at it, but they do this a lot, right, where one guy moves up, oh, he's going to try 170, and another guy moves up, oh, he's going to try 170. What do? They match them together. It's kind of deflating because you're like, no, I wanted to see him against 170 or him against 170. But it's good because, like,
well,
you're
the good
saying,
thing is they have
heat. Chance. Yeah, they have heat, and it gives them a chance also to kind of – they're in that right spot of their career where they're coming off a loss. They're not sure about the division. They're a tweener. You know, what's going on with 165? Do something like that, even if it's up at 170, like you said. Play off of that heat.
Yeah, I mean, by all means, if it's a dumb idea, tell me. But
no,
I was just thinking
idea.
maybe it gets a few check marks. Let's take this quick break. Yeah. Goes and John had to step outside for just a second. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on the new Fight Nation Channel 93. We'll be right back, and we'll take some calls. So get in the queue at 866-522-2846. We'd like to see how you react to UFC Fight Night 135, which took place this past weekend in Lincoln, Nebraska.
You ready, Mace?
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time
for us to
What you know about?
They were abducted by aliens and instantly returned for raiding all their snacks. They are Gorgeous George and Goes. And this is MMA Junkie Radio.
Football is back, and SiriusXM has it covered from every angle as the NFL preseason wraps up and college football's chase for number one begins with a big weekend of marquee matchups. Join us Thursday for kickoff 2018. Every SiriusXM sports channel all day looking ahead to the biggest sports stories, and getting you ready for all the excitement. Kickoff 2018, Thursday, and all weekend on SiriusXM Sports. All right. Before I answer these calls, I just want to give everybody some pertinent numbers to this past weekend, UFC Fight Night 135 in Lincoln, Nebraska. The bonuses went to Corey Sanhagen and Yuri Alcantara. For Fight of the Night, Justin Gaethje and Eric Anders for Performance of the Night. 6,409 were in attendance, and the total gate was 478,337 arena at the Pinnacle Bank Arena. Also, quick note to Jake Ellenberger, thank you for so many years of fighting and helping build this sport. 21 fights in the UFC is an incredible accomplishment. As high as a top five fighter after that Marquardt win. I remember that. And even though things didn't end the way you wanted it, you still gave us our fair share of vicious KOs and great action, man. So congrats on an awesome career. Mm-hmm. Unique that Brian Barberino basically retired both Ellenberger brothers.
Which Joe says he's not retired, but he has some medical issues to deal with, so he's not medically clear. But he says he's not retired.
Oh, really?
Okay. I will say... And no disrespect to Eric Anders, because he's a phenomenal athlete, and that finish was awesome. But I thought maybe like Deiveson Figueiredo might have had a better shot at a Performance of the Night. Like the finish in the Eric Anders fight was amazing, but I was surprised it was Performance of the Night. It was more like Move of the Night. You know what I mean?
Even Gaethje, you can kind of play that. That's what's so confusing about having these now is sometimes they make a big statement with something they do, but I wouldn't say you're right. I agree with you 100%. Performance-wise?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, there's one. I mean, it feels like every other card, there's one that really kind of bugs me on these. And I don't know if it bugs me more because of just the surrounding kind of market with the fighters and the sponsorships. And even maybe, John, you know better about this. We also throw out the term backroom bonuses and this and that. And I just, I don't know what the state of that is. And even because, you know, it's a different time. Like you just mentioned retirement. I went back and watched a lot of Ellenberger's fights for the top five welterweight wars list. Even a non-Ellenberger fight, but a retirement fight was Hardy and Lytle. And right. At the end of it, you see like Frank, Lorenzo, Dana. It's like a party in the. It sounds very simple what I'm explaining, but you look at it in contrast now, and it's complete different. Like it was like a very much like, you know, the boss is coming out and giving me the reward personally. There's that family feel to it, you know. And it was one of the more beautiful retirements in MMA. Chris Lytle's, for those who haven't seen it, you know, I mean, came out on the win, but it was a nice moment. And you know, I don't know what's going on back there anymore. I'm sorry the tangenting there between the bonuses and the retirement talk, but you guys would get what I'm saying. I don't know how those checks it is.
Right there. People still do get a little extra money that's not reported, but okay. But not it's not like handed in the back like it used to be.
Couldn't they give five guys $40,000 instead of four guys $50,000? Sure. The one guy that had the most, you know, that's up for KO of the year might go, fuck, I was in there. I'm getting job for $10,000, but you know, couldn't they distribute the budget?
They
maybe
could get 10 guys $20,000 or 20 guys $10,000.
Yeah,
there's a lot of ways.
I don't know, because Sanhagen and Alcantara, that was an incredible comeback because of what happened to his arm, but there was a lot of just beat down. Whereas you guys are right, there was just some other impressive things, like for Gaethje to take out a guy that's 8-1 in the UFC and like 13-1 overall with that punch. You know, could he have gotten something, or could someone else have gotten something? I don't know. But, all right, we'll touch on that in a second. Let's take some calls. We'll start off with Kevin in Chicago. Again, if you want to follow these gentlemen, it's 866-522-2846. What's up, Kevin? How you doing?
What's up? So the lifelong boxer got knocked out by the lifelong wrestler. I thought that was pretty interesting. But I thought I had Vic winning. I slightly had him as a favorite. Until I saw him at cutting weight, and he looked horrible, sunken in. So then I started to lean towards Gaethje, but I did not expect him to knock him out like that.
Yeah, I tried not to let that weight cut bother me too much because he really does look like that every single time. But it's hard not to. And again, like I said, it, you know, on the road show that we did this week, is he was still sweating. So it was like important to note that as bad as he looked, I mean, water was literally dripping out of him. It was pouring off of him. So he was still, you know, hydrated enough that his body would release that much. But yeah, dude, when you hear his voice change and it's like he can barely talk, and as you said, he's super sunken in, it's hard not to lose some confidence. He even joked about it. He was like, I know I look bad. He's like, that's good for me though, because it's just gonna make the odds drop, you know, because people are gonna think. But I don't know, man. I'd like to see him. You know, you had James Krause saying, you know, after his win, he was saying, man, look, I'm not gonna lie, like I was a little worried that maybe these guys were gonna be too big and too strong for me. He's like, but man, I felt so athletic. I felt so there. Anthony Smith was there, and he came back, and I was like, man, what is this? Is it just moving weight? He's like, listen, it's not just moving weight. Everything's finally coming together for me. He's like, but I am telling you, as soon as I stopped cutting that weight, I felt stronger. I felt more. He's like, I could see the fight happening like I could never do before. He's like, the last two fights, my mind has been so clear. I've been able to click and make decisions like during the middle of the fight that I couldn't do before. And so I just think there's so much to this. And it seems so logical. Like, why dehydrate yourself to the point of near death and then try to be at peak athletic performance 24 hours later? I mean, it doesn't make much sense. So I don't know, man. I'm not trying to tell James Vick what to do with his career, but, you know, witnessing it firsthand and seeing it, I'd like to at least see him take a fight at 170. I mean, look at Robert Whittaker at 185. I remember when he decided to move up, I'm like, this dude is going to get
Calvin Gastelum
at middleweight. That's it, you know?
Dos Anjos?
Maybe pick up the phone and call those guys. Those are the perfect guys to call and just say, how'd you feel? How'd you do it?
That's it, man. Do one. See how you feel.
Yep. Yeah. Kevin, thanks for the call. Sure.
James Krause, I thought he should have got the bonus. He was a big-time underdog knocking out that Worthy Alves, who's never been finished. I thought he could have got the bonus.
That a lot of guys could have got bonuses, that's for sure, yeah.
Phenomenal performance there from Krause as well, man. That was a tough one. I thought Worley had that, and, man, Krause looked phenomenal. That knee was just perfectly timed, and then I didn't hear anybody complaining. I think the finish – I know Al's never hit the floor, but, dude, he was just on his feet taking shots.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Brian in Boston. What's up, Brian?
Hey, boys.
What's up, man?
Couple thoughts, man. This weekend's fights – almost kind of restored my faith in the UFC. I'm a hardcore. I've been with this company, I don't know, since UFC 1. And I was so focused on this next upcoming pay-per-view where the fights they're asking me to pay for, women aside, right? Let's take that out. You're asking me to pay for fighters who weigh 135, 115, 115, 125 and then 170. Now, I'm cool with the 170 fight because, you know, those guys kind of hit the ring at 185 to 190 or whatever they're doing. Plus, I'm a tyrant fan. But they're asking me to pay for fights with people that are too small. Now, we don't want to get into the women's MMA, but if you just look at it at the size of humans, those humans are too small for me to pay $70 to. Whereas if you look at this weekend's card, right, you had 185, 145, 170, 155, 145. There was a nice mixture. And I felt like this weekend's card was like old school UFC, where they give you a mixture of big people, skilled people, new people, and the fights were exciting. There was knockouts and decisions and submissions.
Can I follow? I want to ask you on that because, listen, what you're saying is not abnormal, I think, of society, I guess. I mean, we've said it's hard to sell the smaller guys, right? But I guess I've never really had a chance to sit down with somebody that says, that's the way I believe. Why is it that you don't want to pay that? Because I look at, like, bantamweight, you know, Dominic Cruz, TJ Dillashaw, Cody Garbrandt. I mean, those are some amazing fighters. You know, I look at Demetrius Johnson. I love watching that guy fight, man. I think he's such a phenomenal martial artist. Now, I'm in a different position. I'm working, and I'm actually getting paid to cover those fights. You are asked, you know, you're in a different position because you're being asked to take money out of your pocket. But, I mean, would you not agree that those are phenomenal fighters? And why is it that you're not willing to pay to see guys based on size rather than based on skill and talent?
Because I want the mixture. I have, from my own perspective, I'm close to 6'5". I'm well over 200 pounds. I have a tough time relating to a 115-pound woman fighting another 115-pound woman. Now, you give me one of those fights on the card, okay. And even with Demetrius Johnson, you know, and I've talked to the fellas about this before. To me, Demetrius Johnson is like jazz, right? Jazz is phenomenal music. Some people are complete jazz heads. I get that he's talented, but he doesn't excite me, man. He doesn't get me up on a Saturday morning going, you know, I can't wait to watch this guy fight. Now, if he's in a mixture of the cards, yes. Now, I like the 135 and 145 is enough. But if you feed me too much 125 and 115, I'm not going to pay for a WEC /Invicta card. I don't want it. I don't watch WNBA, and I don't watch the LPGA.
Man, I'm blown away here, guys. I'm sorry.
I don't know how to feel about this call.
I know. Brian from Boston.
I respect where he's coming from. Oh, yeah, of course you do.
Brian from Boston is one of my favorite callers, but it feels like, you know, when you're hanging out with a, you know, kind of a group of new people, and one guy thinks, you know, you're in the group, and he decides to let an off-color racial comment fly to see if you're on board, and you're kind of like, whoa, man, that's not me.
I mean, I can respect your position. I'm also not
he's
a 6'5 guy.
He's
so
just
I
getting,
can see, you know.
He doesn't mind it in servings.
Right.
He just wants a mixture.
Yeah, he likes the mixture. And I like right. Maurice. I like
so he's a bigot. He's a bigot who likes mixture.
But
I'm just kidding.
The counter argument to this, though, is going back to something you said, having to pay for the money. And one thing that I can say has an advantage in what they're doing here is how many times does a fight fall off and is it easier to just go, well, we got other 155ers, let's just plug that guy.
Right.
And that sometimes can keep people from ordering a pay-per-view when fights drop off and you can't get that replacement. So sometimes it does kind of work out, but you're right. Okay, at first I wanted to strangle him. I kind of saw his point.
A little bit.
The mixture is what we need to get.
The threat of the KO ratio as you get to the heavier weights, you know, a lot of it has to do with that for some people. But we already got our title fight with Shevchenko, Montano. Kovalevich and Andrade are high-level strawweights, so you may be able to sneak that in there. But the rest of the main card has to also support it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I understand what he's saying as well there.
I love those Joe Silva lightweight openers where they had the lightweight division usually open up that card and kind of rounding it back to the Gaethje point. Maybe that's why they should pay a guy like Gaethje, because Gaethje's a guy where you can either have him headline the fight night card or even, you know, or you throw him on a pay-per-view like this just to silence everybody. Be like, but you got Gaethje under there too. I'm paying for Gaethje, and he's not even the main card, main attraction fight. I'm in.
Brian, let me tell you this. Whatever decision you make, before you make it, check out the Darren Till promo on MMA Junkie.
Hot fire.
And see if it maybe stirs you up a little bit, and maybe you're one of those 11th hour decision guys that decides to get it. But if not, understood. Taking that hit with Yair Rodriguez does suck, and we don't have an opponent just yet, right?
Yeah, so. I didn't realize there were three. I'm not going to lie. I didn't realize there were three women's fights on there. Is that the first time on a pay-per-view?
Yeah, I didn't realize.
Has to be.
Yeah.
On the main card. Has to be.
It's a little affair out there in the Lone Star State.
Does that card get your juices flowing compared to what we've seen over the last 20 years?
I mean, there's a couple matchups,
dude. To drop dough on that, I think that's insulting. If they had moved around some of this card, like last night's card or Sunday night's card was great. That was a ton of action, a ton of fights.
Understood. Otherwise, all of them would have the same amount of pay-per-views. There's just a drop-off for some cards, and I totally understand your point, my man. You explained it very carefully. So thank you very much for the call. We got to move on. Thanks, Brian. Folks, we got to take our second break of the first hour. It's MMA Junkie Radio on the new Fight Nation Channel 83. Stay close, and we'll be right back. We still have time to take some calls because our guests come in the second hour, but 15 minutes into the second hour, it'll be Michael Johnson, as well as Sean O'Connell. So stay close. We'll be right back.
I get paid to say things in this cool voice, and they get paid to be lame. Here are Gorgeous George and Goes.
SiriusXM, the Highway and Ram Trucks have your chance to win the all-new Ram 1500. One grand prize winner will drive off in a new Ram 1500 equipped with the best radio on the road, the SiriusXM 360L. It's the newest, most amazing way to experience SiriusXM. For official rules and to enter, go to SiriusXM.com/Ram. Do that before September 19th. Online entries only. Certain eligibility restrictions apply. See official rules. No purchase is necessary to enter or to win. All right, let's take some more calls here. We'll start off with Marco and Waco. What's up, Marco?
Marco from Waco. ¿Qué pasa, Atos?
What's up, Holmes?
Marco?
The last caller I call bullshit, man. You're calling to MMA Junkie Radio saying you're not going to buy a pay-per-view? That's what we do on MMA Junkie. Go to the door and turn your membership card right now, because we are hardcore. We buy every pay-per-view no matter what. Who was Bellator? Who was Invicta? Who was LFA? Come on, dude. Don't come with that bullshit. You're not going to buy the pay-per-view. I don't believe it.
Caller drama. I love it.
I think when a hardcore says I'm not going to buy the pay-per-view, really what they mean is I'm trying to figure out whether I want to watch this at home or go to Buffalo Wild Wings.
But they're still going to watch
Thank
it.
They're still going to watch it.
Well, he says he's Thanks. A Wood, or not him, but Brian does say he's a Woodley fan. Mm-hmm. So do you want to not watch that fight? You know,
bro, that feeling when you're on social media, this only happened to me one time, and people say, can you believe that happened? Or did you see that? And like, you didn't? It's not worth it. How many times have you gone to a movie and it's a shit movie? Whatever. You come back the next week, you watch another one, right?
That's one of your expenses.
It's gonna happen.
I just can't get over the fact that Brian is a sizist. I mean, could you imagine his UFC pay-per-view event? The fighters would first have to make weight, then they'd have to get past one of those Disneyland, are you tall enough to get past this scale? And if the average doesn't fit Brian's liking, this card's not going down, people.
Brian
a sizist. I like it. He's a sizist.
Marco, what'd you think of the main event in Nebraska?
Okay, real quick, on the card overall, man, my parlay got busted right after Mexico. I pick up one winner, I went 1-4, but I pick up all the medals for victory. So I got the decision, the knockouts and the submission right, but to the wrong people. If Justin Gaethje keeps dropping nuclear bombs like he threw to James Big, the whole conversation changes again. All the people that were counting him off, including myself, that we throw. Holy freaking shit, that knockout was beautiful. Last game, that guy, Sanhagen, wow. Violence in person. And that guy is double or triple jointed because I saw for sure his elbow was broken. Wow. I'm going to keep an eye on that dude. Peace out, dude.
See you, bud.
Yeah, man. I was in the press room in that one, and we were squirming, man, watching that play out. It was just like, dude, what is going on? And he comes back there after the fight, and his elbow's all wrapped up, and we're like, dude, like, that had to hurt. He's like, yeah, man, I heard it popping. He's like, but – Like, you know, I was more worried that he was going to choke me out. He's like, he can break my arm. He's like, but I can keep fighting. He's like, but if he chokes me out, then I'm out and I lose. I'm like,
he's a
bro,
gangster.
We are wired totally different,
he's
man.
He's a gangster. One more quick one from Dan in Oregon. Dan, you got about 90 seconds. What's up, buddy?
Man, John, I think a word like incapacitate or something for a second would have been better than staggered.
There you go. That would have been the right one.
But in the heat of the moment, I can't blame you, man. But Justin Casey, I love that shit. I love when you call out the media on their misused terms. I love seeing him on Ariel calling him out for that, what's that kid, that Gallagher kid nonsense. He's like, are you on the good side or the bad side, Ariel? The kid wants to talk that much.
Who said that?
Gotta let him eat that shit. And there's a difference between what James Vick does and what Gallagher does. Gallagher's DMing fucking what's his name, telling him he's gonna kill him and shit like that.
That was a little over the line.
Yeah.
All right.
And how about a finish bonus, man? Where's our 25K finish bonuses? This card is what we want out of cards, man. This the freaking the Calgary card. We want finishes all up and down the board. It's better to watch. It's better on FS1. The UFC makes the right move there, man. The callers are right, man. There's a lot of performance on here that deserve a bonus in that regard. And, Marco, you want to call out hardcores, man. I don't ever hear you talking about Risen. I don't hear you talking about one championship.
Oh, shit.
Because the guy's going to go to Reddit MMA streams and pick that shit up. And if you are, go to Woodley, man. Go buy a T-shirt directly.
All right, I got to bounce you. We got the gist. Good stuff. We'll be right back, folks, after this break. No matter what you do in the bathroom to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. They have amazing shower stuff, hair styling products, toothbrushes, and toothpaste, and of course, razors and shave supplies.
I use these products every day, George. The Amber and Lavender Body Wash is how I start my morning off. I get my body all nice and smooth, and then I switch over to the Big Cloud Good Shake Hand Cream. I love that stuff. But that's how I get ready. You're not me. You have to have your own way to get ready. You might shave your whole body to get ready for a bike race. Dollar Shave Club's Executive Razor and Shave Butter can help with that. You might do your hair to get ready for a soccer match. Boogies by Dollar Shave Club can help with that. It can get your style on point. The thing is, no matter what you do to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need.
And right now, you can get ready with an amazing deal on any one of their starter sets. I recommend the Daily Essentials starter set because I love Amber Lavender Body Cleanser. That's right. I love it. But you can't go wrong with any of them. Head over to thedollarshaveclub.com/junkie to pick up your own DSC starter set for just $5. After your starter set, products ship at a regular price. And make sure you check out their new video, too. That's dollarshaveclub.com/junkie, dollarshaveclub.com/junkie.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to MMA Junkie Radio. I want to take this time to let you know about our producer Danny's show. It's called Popping Off, and it airs live twice a week, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can find the show, if you missed the live show, you can find the recording on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube the following day. Check it out. It's a lot of fun, and you get to see a little bit more of our producer Danny's personality. And my phone just rang in the background, so I'll turn that off. That sounds stupid. Fucking phone.
It's popping off.
My iPhone decided to itself. I got an appointment at the Apple Store. They ask you to give a number that they send to your phone when your phone is broken.
Oh.
And you need the appointment for it. And they just kept trying to send it. And I was like, I can't get the code.
And then it turns into like an identity thing. And they're
yeah.
like,
I had to go to Geek Squad for my iPhone just for them to book an appointment at an Apple Store without using my iPhone.
Oh, you poor thing.
Did you tell them just to send a carrier pigeon?
Watch live on the FNTSY YouTube stream.
Start the second
that
hour.
Very.
This was 100% Ghost Pack. Yeah.
This is one of your you really like a song that these guys play too.
I don't like this one.
Man.
Who are these cats?
Clearwater.
I do like Clearwater. I do like a few songs. I think it's the one Jim Miller walks out to, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well,
go to hell, George.
If they played this when I was walking out, I'd walk right back. Like, why am I coming out? Put another one on.
Wow.
Good hey, by God. The way, Brian from Boston probably not be allowed into the Joseph Benavides Beach Dorm.
No.
Joseph Benavides.
That's a good song right there. Yeah.
There we go. He's probably watching Limbo Contest.
Is this the one we played last week with Mike Perry?
Yes.
Nah. He was feeling it, wasn't he?
Yeah, we should have got him to walk out to this.
Yeah. he really liked it. All right. Guys, I have a few notes down that I want to go over. One was Mickey Gall, and I don't know why I want to skip the co-main event, because I guess we're going to talk to Michael Johnson, the winner of that fight.
Fair.
But Mickey Gall in the call-outs, okay, so I'm always the one saying, guys, go out there, call your shot, but what was that?
You didn't like it?
No.
Eh, we remembered it.
No, because it seems like now it's too easy of a road. Like, he's 4-1 in the UFC. I want to see somebody that's aiming higher. I didn't like any of those names. Did you feel the same way?
Well, because I actually asked him about it afterwards. I'm like, bro, no disrespect, man. Like, obviously, you steamrolled this guy. You came in, did your thing. But, like, what's up with the call-outs? And he said, well, like, Diego Sanchez is a legend. I'm like, yeah, but he's got a fight right now. He's like, but it's in 2 weeks. He's like, so we can do it after that. And I was like, all right, I get it. He's a legend.
He's taking the easy road, and he's just trying to get to that next contract or something.
But then he said he liked Randy Brown again. And he said because he's asking to run it back, that he has to offer to run it back with somebody, which is why he offered Sage.
Randy Brown
Sage
wants to run it back?
Mickey Gall does.
Right. So Randy saying, Brown probably don't.
Right, but that's what he's saying. If I'm asking somebody to run it back, then I need to offer somebody else to run it back, so I'll offer Sage Northcutt, who I already beat.
Yeah, but still, I mean, after hearing all that, that didn't.
That was his logic, but I was just like, all right, cool.
Yeah, I wasn't feeling that at all.
It's like
I want to hear stuff like what Gagey said.
Yeah. It feels like he's trying to do more of the Sam Alvey gimmick, but at least with Alvey's, Alvey kind of embraced the corniness. You know, he didn't come off corny. He just it's gonna be what it is. He embraced that, and for the most part, except for like maybe one, he would always call out a guy. Like, it made sense.
Pretty tough guys, and he will travel to a theater near you. He was always saying, "I'll travel to you and fight," you know, other guys.
Yeah.
And these are, I mean, Sage has gotten better, you know, but I just think that 4-1 warrants a point at some point where you probably want to start calling out a bigger name. Let's see if you're for real. I mean, he says he's a New Jersey legend. I can think of another New Jersey legend, Frankie Edgar. I'm pretty sure he had a tougher road at fight number 6, which would be what Mickey Gall's next fight would be. So I think I love what he's doing. I respect the 4-1, but I just think the when you have that much time to prepare for a call out like he does, he puts time into it. He researches. Throw in some other name that really is going to shake up Twitter and make it move in a positive way for you, you know? But whatever. I'm not going to spend more time
on that. He looks so damn good in the fight, though. I ain't going to holler at him for maybe botching the call out just a little bit.
Dan from Morgan, sorry to cut you off. Those are great points you were making about Marco. And, yeah, Rizin and some of those. He's called in while he's watching fights in Russia. So Dan does take it to a new level. But I hope Ryan from Boston decides to watch UFC 228. I think in the last 2 years, one card per year is I've taken a stand and just not ordered it and either done the buddy thing or someone comes through. But I understand exactly what he's feeling. You look at the card and you go, oh, man. Especially, see, I love what the UFC did in bringing in Ferguson Pettis as insurance for the main event, but also another fight. This is after the tickets had already sold out. You know what I mean? So they really didn't need to do that. But I think they really, really took a positive step, you know, for those fans that paid so much money, you know, in Dallas. What happened here was what I was hoping wouldn't happen to the Las Vegas card, and that's anything other than Habib and Connor taking a hit. Not that it still isn't going to be an outstanding card, but you still want to see some names when you kind of pay for that kind of money, aside from Habib and McGregor. At least the hardcores do. The celebrities just want to come in for the last few fights, but Dallas, man, I really hope they keep Magomed Sharapov on that card. Is there an update on that?
I haven't heard. No, I wanted to reach out to Ali
There's
today.
There's so
and
many
see
quality featherweights. It's just, do they want to take it on this time of notice, this short of notice?
Dude, nobody wants to fight that guy on short notice, let's just be honest. I don't think you're going to get a name on this short notice against Zabit because we all know who Zabit is. We all know what he's capable of.
I want to ask Michael Johnson that question.
Knows.
This fight was the fight that was supposed to make the casual fan get it.
That's right.
I think.
I agree.
I was hoping Johnson and Feely would end quickly, and one of those guys might do the Anthony Smith and say, hey, Zabit, I heard you need an opponent, similar to what they were saying to Alex in L.A. for Staples before he knew he was off the card. I'll be there.
And here's what sucks is that, you know, Michael Johnson, like, of course, man, look at who he's fought. He fights anybody, right? He's not afraid of anybody. But that fight, realistically, doesn't do much for him. If he beats Zabit, y'all, the hardcore goes, damn, Michael Johnson just beat Zabit. I guess he is legit at 145. But the casuals, they'll just be like, oh, so you beat some dude we've never heard of? Like, I don't, what?
And remember he was going to take the Ferguson fight here?
Mm-hmm.
Everything was in line, the medicals. I think they, I don't know. We'll see. We'll ask him. We got him coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. Let's do the daily debate. I think now's a good time. Stuff went down over the weekend aside from the fights. And it's what makes this sport a colorful sport, man. You just never know what you're going to read. Especially when TMZ's got the camera on you. And I'm wondering if Mr. Buffer had a few drinks or what. But here we go. For today's MMA Junkie Radio daily debate, we want to know who has made the best points thus far in the surprising debate between Bruce Buffer and Nate Diaz. I guess we should state what was said. Bruce Buffer is basically a little disappointed in Nate Diaz, saying so much as to Nate should be bowing to Dana White for the kind of, I think what he meant to say is for the career he's given him. He also put it out there and said he had heard that Nate Diaz made $7 million in his last fight. His last fight was about 2 years ago versus Conor McGregor Part 2. Nate Diaz fires back and says, I'm not bowing to anyone. Let's talk about this, guys.
I think the unfortunate word was bow, but yeah. it's one that Bruce Buffer uses. I think he says it in his autobiography. I've heard him say it in interviews before. He says, I bow down to the Fertittas and Dana every time I see them because I thank them for what they've done for the sport. So it's a term that he's used himself, but he doesn't mean it as, you know, literally bow down on the ground. It's just he shows respect to them, and I think that's all he meant. And so that's the word that's getting taken out. That's just like everybody, oh, I can't believe he said this, because I kind of understand what Bruce is saying in terms of, like, I just want to see Nate fight, man. Nick too, for that matter, man. Like, and it's so frustrating that they do complain that they won't fight. And I want to see him fight. And I think that's, at the end of the day, what we all say is, like, dude, if they're going to help you get paid, let's just get you in the cage. So I think Bruce's heart was in the right place. I just think it's that one word that everybody's keying on.
He's so eloquent, too, when he speaks. Usually he chooses his words wisely, you know. And him being him, his public persona is one where he usually doesn't say that. But as soon as he said it, I knew Twitter sphere was going to gobble him up, because there are people there just ready to dissect whatever you have to say and chop it up into pieces. So I knew it wasn't going to go well. And also the target, I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, a gangster from the 209. He ain't bound to anybody, you know. But here's the point. Bruce, you know, okay, let's just say the $7 million payday was accurate. I feel like Nate deserves that. I mean, he earned that money because he choked out Conor McGregor on 10-day notice. Conor wanted to run it back. It sold well, so he's entitled to his money. I think Bruce should just say, hey, Nate, just get to fighting. We all love it when you fight. Forget, don't let these little things, you know, hamper your enthusiasm for the sport, and get out there and performing, and kind of stop whining and start being yourself. I started to warm up to some of his interviews when he would promote his fights. Be that guy. I think he's beyond that. He's a superstar, guys. Mm-hmm. He should be fighting. Goes?
Well, my first thought was this.
Okay.
I heard the word and I thought, that's just not going to go over well. But maybe with other fighters, a few handful, but with a Diaz brother, they're not going to bow out anyone. So I understand that part. When you think about it, the Buffers, Michael and Bruce, have seen a lot of things in combat sports. And they've seen a lot of people piss their careers away. And they've seen a lot of people be successful in what they do. Bruce Buffer has been through lots of generations of fighters in the UFC, so I'm sure he's seen a lot of that, and I think that demands a certain respect. Mm-hmm. I think his points are valid. I agree with you. Nate Diaz deserves all that money he made. He is a superstar, but it also depends on what the other name is on the other side of his name, because he can't get that kind of money
for everybody
on the roster. If you take Conor McGregor, pick any one of those names. He's still going to make a lot of money. Nate Diaz doesn't have that power, and I think maybe that's what Bruce is trying to get across to him, is, hey, you're in a good spot. Be thankful that you're there, because it could easily be someplace else.
Dan?
Yeah, basically, Bruce meant well, but, you know, unfortunately didn't come off that way. I side more with Nate here. More importantly, it's not so much taking sides. I think it's good because, in the sense that it brought light to
the relationship with the fighters and the promoter. Yes, you know, we owe Dana and the Fertittas their place in history, but at the same time, we break down the numbers of any fighter promoter and fighter. It's not exactly fair and balanced. So when you throw a word like that on there on top of that, you know, fans are going to get upset.
I side with Nate. You side with Nate?
Yeah.
We have to pick someone. Who do you side with?
I sided with Bruce.
Who do you side with?
I sided with Bruce if it had been phrased a little different. I mean, not siding. I'm not siding with anybody. But I think, Bruce, the point is, yeah, man, just let's do this. But the bow down comment was probably a little unfortunate.
Hopefully these guys can see each other in the lobby and go, you know what I meant, and hug it out and just move on.
That's it.
Because that's all everybody wants is for him
to
fight.
The way that the Diaz brothers always do, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That shit ain't happening, guys.
1,227 votes came through. Yeah, he's got an enemy for life. Nate, more people sided with Nate and what he had to say. At 56% versus Bruce Buffer.
I'm surprised it was that close.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
Wow.
All right, folks. Let's take some more calls. We got a few. I think we can do one more, and then we got to take a break. It's Cage Side Nick. He's on hold. What's up, Cage Side Nick?
Yeah.
Not much. Everything's going good. But, yeah, I wanted to disagree with Goz over there. I thought Goz would be all for Nate Diaz, but I really believe that if you set any fighter against Nate Diaz, he can sell a pay-per-view. I really think where
he'll. I don't know about that, man.
A pay-per-view with even Justin Gaethje as boring as that fight, he'll still. I think that pay-per-view will still sell. All right, guys.
But I think
I'll thank you guys later.
Okay, right. Thank you.
The point Bruce is making, though, and I think that's why he used $7 million is. That's kind of the realm that I think Nate feels like he deserves that, and I agree he deserved it for that particular fight.
Right.
But you're not gonna get that with another fighter is what I'm trying to say. I think that's what Bruce was.
Especially when he's been featured on
him.
Fox, you know, he would have to prove that he's a pay-per-view guy, and let's just say Gaethje, let's say Nate Diaz fought Gaethje, that's not selling 1.65 million pay-per-views. You know, we don't know what it would sell because Nate since then wasn't proactive with his career, and so we don't know if that would have established him as a star or not. Ooh, I was trying to sneak Showtime in, but I did get the music. So it's time for a break. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on the new Fight Nation, Channel 93. Stay close, and we'll be right back.
Charm, compassion, common sense. These guys have none of that. You listen to them, so you're no better. I am awesome, though. They are Gorgeous George and Goz.
Guys, we got to talk about this. How much Showtime? You can play along as well, all right? This is Showtime from Tennessee. He's our caller. John, if USA Today called you right now or texted or whatever and said, we're going to give you a raise.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Perone should be coming in anytime soon. He's going to give you the good news, but you must bow to him. Would you bow to him?
How much of a raise are we talking about?
10% raise.
And I mean, I just have to do like the polite Japanese, like, good day to you, sir?
Yeah.
Oh, all day.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I had to like get on the ground or something and like do like
Akiyama style?
Yeah. You know?
you get a 50% Akiyama style.
Akiyama style?
On your knees and still go down like this.
50%? I mean,
that's what I'm saying, right?
You could film it. I don't give a fuck, yeah. Dude. I think
our point, audience, is I think Nate Diaz would bow. He can act all hard and stuff, but to fight again for $7 million, I think. He's not going to make $7 million for this
I don't part. Have $7 million in the bank. Nate Diaz does.
Well, I don't know, man. Those guys...
Would it change your perspective? You, though.
If I had $7 million in the bank and then we had the Perone question, I'd be like, I got money that I don't need to do this, man.
Well, you wouldn't do it with the $7
million? But to get to the $7 million, you're getting paid handsomely, so 10% raise of that is probably good money.
I don't know. Not 10% if I got $7 million in the bank. I don't have $7 million in the bank. Hey, I seen those dudes when they go out, man. They don't pay for much.
But they eat very hard.
They get comped a lot.
What's going to hurt about it, though? Somebody's just going to go, hey, remember that time you bowed? What are you going to do? You're just going to go, you're fucking right, and throw a chair. Like, you're really going to get that mad, like, years from now?
No,
that's
aren't
you
saying.
Thinking about your yacht and shit like that
that's
like
what
you
I'm
just
saying.
Did?
I don't know, man. The next time I'm talking to Perone about something going on at work, and he's like, you ever remember that time you bowed to me for 10%, bitch?
Maybe.
I'm telling you. Nate's going to get paid what? Take a guess, guys. $250 for this next fight?
Yeah.
Okay. It's either that or get paid $7 million if he bows. He's bowing.
I want to see Ghost take this argument back to William Wallace when he's getting tortured. Come on, man. You tell me you just can't kiss the seal? You just can't kiss the seal? You're really going to get disemboweled in front of everybody? You just kiss the seal.
I kiss the seal. I take the money. And guess what? When my ass goes back to Scotland, I'm tweeting, nay, bitches. Guess what? I got away. Can't catch me.
Showtime, what's up, buddy?
What's going on, fellas? John Morgan, what's up?
What's going on, brother?
Nothing much.
When's the last time you bowed to someone, Showtime?
Shit, I haven't. But if you're going to give me $1 million, I'll bow.
If you didn't have to wait in those big, long wait, what are they called? Those stops, you know, that the truckers do when you have to stand in line for the scales. If you had a pass on your dash that could just get you through, but all you had to do was pull over your truck and bow to that weight scale place, would you do it?
I actually got one of those things. It's called pre-pass.
Really?
Yeah, those I might exist? Do that. Yeah, it's called pre-pass. It gives you a green light to keep going and it gives you a red light to stop and go in. Yeah.
But if there was a bow line at the DMV, I would be in that line every day. Every time I go.
All right, make it quick, Showtime. We got our guest ready. What's up, bud?
Man, that main event, man, was a hell of a fight, man. I pushed all my chips to the middle of the table. I was down. I just thought Gaethje wouldn't lose three in a row, man. And he got me back in the game. And I'm out on
nice.
That.
Nice.
Good job, bud.
That's a good call, actually, man. When you lay it down like that, is this guy, you know, going to lose three in a row? Probably not. He's talented enough.
Yeah. So you made money this weekend is what you're saying. Oh, he's gone. All right. Let's get to our first guest of the day. His name is Sean O'Connell. He's also a fellow host of ours on Fight Nation 93. Catch him and Misha Tate on Wednesdays for MMA Tonight. He joins us now on MMA Junkie Radio. What's up, Sean? How you doing?
Doing all right. How are you guys?
Good. Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio. You're on with George and Goes. We also have Dan and John Morgan with us here. Anxious to see the next edition of PFL on Thursday nights, man. How about you? Tell me a little bit about PFL, not just as a fighter. I want you to tell me you have the eyes of a media person as well, and as a fan. How would you grade the way that they've been, you know, putting on the shows?
I mean, I'm obviously not unbiased, but I think they've done a great job so far. They're treating the fighters with a lot of respect. They're making sure everything's done well logistically. They're trying to be open to new ideas, maybe expanding for season two into some more weight classes, maybe a women's division. And I think maybe most importantly, because they are a new organization, trying to bite off a little piece of a market that's been dominated by one company for a long time, I think they're doing it trying to grow at the right pace, and they're doing it in a more sustainable manner, you know, already securing funding for next year before you really even get into season one and that kind of stuff. So I'm confident that we have a new player in the mixed martial arts world with the PFL. I'm glad to be part of it. And, you know, I'll be more focused on, I guess, the behind-the-scenes stuff when I'm not also fighting.
Are you also, not just yourself, but do you get the feeling that the other fighters are also auditioning for season two? Regardless, only one person can win it out of the 12. But do you feel like that's also like the buzz? You guys are so happy that, hey, I want to be a part of this for the next season.
I think that right now everyone's still pretty focused on season one. You know, there's a lot of guys fighting on this card Thursday that have to win in order to make it into the playoffs. And more importantly, you know, the guys who are already in the playoffs are looking for $1 million payday at the end of this year before we get to season two. So I think everyone's still pretty focused on season one. I know there are some other guys maybe who got late replacement opportunities. On Thursday night, we're doing some showcase fights with guys who are not in the regular season or playoff tournaments. They're not on the PFL roster just yet. They're kind of auditioning on the Facebook Watch prelims. So some of that's going on for those guys. But the ones that you've seen fight so far, feels like everyone's still pretty focused on season one and winning that $1 million at the end of it.
See, I'm one of those guys that thinks forward, and I've already started looking to see, because I know it's going to happen. somebody's going to win both season one and two. And I'm just trying to figure out who it's going to be, because that's going to be a nice run for those people to brag about that, to be able to do that in 18 months, since this season is only 6 months, and next year will be a whole year. But this is Sean O'Connell that we're talking to, folks. He is fighting Bazigit Ateyev at PFL 7 on Thursday in Ocean Resort Casino in Atlantic City. You can catch the fights on NBC Sports Network at 9 p.m. Eastern Start Time. John, what do you have for Sean O'Connell?
Well, first off, Sean, I got to clear. Are you going to be a crazy man again and commentate some prelims first before you fight?
I am. I'm doing the first three fights of the night on Facebook Watch, and then I will be fighting in the, co-main event spot, second to last.
I love it, man. I love it. The first time that happened, I didn't even know it was going to happen. I'm like, is that Sean's voice I hear right now? He's got a fight. Like, I love it. I love it. All right, so here's what I want to know, Sean. I know, I mean, you're a thinking man's fighter. You're an analyst, and you're in a unique spot, right? Because like you said, they don't call it the co-main event spot, but you're in that second-to-last fight. So you're in a pretty advantageous situation. I mean, you've already clinched your playoff spot, but you get to watch all these fights play out other than the headlining spot before you fight. So how much of that is going to affect the way you approach that fight? I mean, are you going to be watching these other fights and watching that standings table and thinking, you know, maybe I wouldn't mind the decision here because I like the spot I'm in and I don't want to jump up too far and fight. You know what I mean? You could kind of play a real direct role in the matchup that you get in that next round. So I just wonder how much you're going to be keeping an eye on that and how much it could really affect the way that you fight on Thursday night.
Yeah, you know, I've been talking about that with Jeremy Horn, my coach, and the correct way to approach this with, the seating kind of being fluid throughout the night and whatnot. And at the end of the day, this is kind of the mentality I had when all this stuff started. I don't really care where I'm seated, right? Like, if I end up, everything goes well for everyone else and terrible for me, I'm the 8th seed or something like that, then I fight Vinny Magalhães, the first fight of the playoff round in October. Now, Vinny's looked great as of late, but is it better to get Vinny on coming off a full camp, fully prepared for him when you're healthy and you haven't been banged up in your first fight of the night and that kind of thing? Or is it better to have him in the second fight? Or is it better to have him in the finals? Like, it's a tough fight no matter what. So I don't really care where I end up getting seated too much. If I start to worry about that, it takes focus off the real task at hand, which is, of course, winning the fight and staying healthy when you win the fight.
Guys, what do you have for Sean O'Connell?
I was going to talk about that. How long did it take you to get to that mindset? Because us here on the panel, we've been overthinking this, I think, sometimes. We come up with all kinds of crazy strategies and things people could do. But some fighters that have come on the show talking about this say, at the end of the day, it just comes down to the fight. That's all I focus on. You seem like you're in a good mindset, but how long did it take you to get to that?
Yeah, man, I'm still in the process, realistically. I mean, I always go in with a game plan. I always get punched in the face. The game plan goes out the window. I plant my feet, and I just start swinging. You guys have seen me fight enough times to know that's usually how it goes. So I'm still in the process of making sure that, you know, I'm thinking the whole way through, not only about in the moment, but about the long-term ramifications and what it means for the playoffs and that tournament and things like that. So, you know, it's a mindset that I'm able to easily bring up when I'm speaking to you on a Monday afternoon. Whether or not that's the case on Thursday night, we'll see.
Sean, going back to your mindset, you do a lot of things outside of just fighting. You have a broadcasting career. And I was thinking about this time period. And what is this time period like for you? Because college football is about to kick off again. Pro football is about to start. Baseball playoffs are coming up. College basketball, college football, all that. All of those type of things. Does that make your other jobs a little bit more stressful? And is this fighting at this particular time right now, does it help at all?
It helps keep me distracted, so I'm not thinking about the fight too much. I'll tell you that. I mean, yeah, this is the busiest time of my life. I've never been this busy in my almost 35 years of life. I wake up at 8 a.m. The workday gets started there. I'm done training usually about 9:30 or 10 on an average day or night, and it's pretty much nonstop full go in between with all the other jobs I'm doing and the things I'm preparing for. You know, I'm doing, in addition to doing the MMA Tonight Show with Misha Tate right here on Sirius, I do the Pac-12 channel on Sirius and occasionally ESPNU on Sirius. And my fight just so happens to be on the opening night of the Pac-12 football season. And my hometown University of Utah Utes are playing at the same time that I'm fighting. So, you know, you got to DVR that. You got to make sure that you watch what you can. And on Friday, when I land back in Salt Lake City after a win here in Atlantic City, you know, I'm going back on the air to talk about college football. So, yeah, it's a real busy time. But for me, that's all right because I've been balancing this for my entire fight career, and I'm used to it by now.
Sean O'Connell, our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. He's fighting Bazigit Ateyev on Thursday night at PFL 7. These are light heavyweights. And remember, PFL has six divisions, 12 fighters per division in a regular season and playoff format, in which the winners at the end of each division at the end of the season will win $1 million. Sean has 18 wins in his career, 10 via KO, 3 via submission. So he is a finisher. And we look forward to his fight. All right, one more here from Dan, our fight analyst. What do you have for OC Sports?
Hey, Sean, I was just curious you know, about your opponent. When I was researching guys in the brackets, he was one of the more stranger ones, Bazigit was, because you look at it, before his last fight to Dan Spahn, you have to go back to like 2002 in Pride against Alistair Overeem for his only loss. You know, he took time off to do kickboxing, Wushu Sanda, but were you able to get like any footage on this guy or just be able to watch his last fight with Dan Spahn?
Well, obviously I watched his last fight with Spahn. I actually commentated that fight. I announced that fight, cage side, so got it up close and personal on that. And yeah, you can find some of his stuff on YouTube and other places. He's a very experienced fighter, and not always in mixed martial arts, but, you know, like you said, crossing over in Wushu Sanda competitions and in kickboxing and some of that stuff. So he's unbelievably seasoned and experienced. You know, I think a lot of people didn't know much about him coming in, but that record made him look pretty scary. I think beatable, and Dan Spahn showed us all otherwise. So that's something I'm going to hope to capitalize on. I expect him to be in better shape this time. I expect him to be to take his opponent more seriously this time than he did in his first fight. I expect it to be a very, very tough test in my career, but I know I'm ready for it, and you know, I'm going to send him home and put him out of the playoffs.
There you go. Sean O'Connell, our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. Follow him on Twitter, RealOCSports, and catch him and Misha Tate, the MMA Tonight Show on Wednesdays, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Sean, man, great to catch up with you. Good luck on Friday. We'll be tuning in, and we're homering for you, man. Get down for Fight Nation Channel 83.
You know I will. Thanks.
All right, brother. Take care. All right, let's take this quick break, and then we'll come back with the menace, Michael Johnson, who got a win over Andre Feely this past weekend at UFC Fight Night 135 in Lincoln, Nebraska. He has wins over Edson Barboza, Dustin Poirier, and Tony Ferguson. So we know he don't suck, but he did have it a little bit rough out of the gate at featherweight. Now he's got that win, and I think now we can start putting him in there against some of the other top names in the featherweight division. Stay close. We'll be right back.
King Kong has a lot of shit on them. Like a lot. Especially goes. Here, Gorgeous George and goes.
The kickoff to college football season is fast approaching, and no one knows about your favorite school. Like SiriusXM's college conference channels, from Heisman Trophy winners or make or break week one games, our analysts are getting you ready for the start of the season. Hear it all on SiriusXM ACC Radio Channel 371, SiriusXM Pac-12 Radio Channel 373, SiriusXM SEC Radio Channel 374, and streaming on your phone or at home on SiriusXM connected devices and speakers. All right, we struck out with Michael Johnson, but I know he'll call in because I was just texting with him a few minutes earlier to let him know we'd be calling, so I know he's aware that we're doing the call here. Guys, how'd you score Johnson and Feely? It was a split.
Bro, I'm telling you what, man, I've gone back and watched it again, and it's so close. I don't have a problem either way. I really don't. I was surprised the way the scores came out because the two judges that gave it to Michael Johnson gave him the second round. And I think that one was tough because, you know, he was in a really bad spot. And yes, he was able to reverse position, but I don't know, man. So rounds one and three were close. Apparently, round two was maybe even closer than I had it in my head. It was a close fight. I think initially I wasn't doing the play-by-play, so I wasn't actively scoring it, but I thought maybe Feely had done enough. But I didn't have a problem with it going to Johnson either.
Mm-hmm. I want to watch round three one more time, but I thought one was close, but I thought Johnson won it. I thought two was close, and I'll even say it when he comes on. I thought they were going to give that one to Feely because when you get the choke underneath, you us as fans and media and even the announcers can tell, oh, wow, this could end the fight. But Johnson managed to push up from the bottom to get it to be where it was more of a crossface, I guess, and there wasn't enough pressure for that. Even prior to that, did you guys see when he spit up in the air? Mm-hmm. So that choke was getting close, but he got underneath first here. Then he started fighting the hands. Then when he reversed it, he got on top. And when Johnson did get on top, he started unleashing some ground and pound. What I felt was that that might not be enough to sway the round back
right. Because
Feely had gotten in under the chin. Had it just been fight the hands, switching arms back and forth, then maybe that is enough. But here I wasn't so sure. Anyway, so my feeling was going into the second, it could be either 2-0 either guy or 1-1. But I really felt like it was probably 1-1 because of the volume that Johnson had put on Feely. And then round three could be the decider, and I lean towards Johnson. But I wouldn't have been shocked with either call.
Nah, it was super close.
So, again, the onus is not on the fighter, or excuse me, on the judges. It's on the fighters. Some judges make some terrible calls from time to time, but I think for the most part they've gotten better. I think as a fighter you have to understand that if that's how you feel about the judges, overwhelmingly win your round and you don't get in these pickles. Joining us now on the hotline is Michael Johnson, the winner of Saturday night's co-main event at UFC Lincoln, Nebraska. What's up, Michael Johnson? How you doing? Congrats on your win. Michael Johnson, you there?
George, I don't know what you're doing. There you go. I couldn't.
Michael
do that.
Johnson, how you doing, man? Congrats on your win.
Yeah. Good. How you guys doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. That was my bad. Sorry. Congrats on the win. Welcome back to MMA Junkie Radio. We were just dissecting it, the fight, round by round. Have you had a chance to look at it back over yet?
Yeah. I looked at the fight a few times.
What do you think won the round for you in round one? Let's have a little fun here. We'll keep it real. 100, all right?
Have a little fun. All right, keep it real. I think I landed more in the first round. I think I had him on his heels more in the first round, and he didn't do anything. You know, he threw his one kick, threw his jab out there, one kick, and then he was on his heels the rest of the round.
I agree that you had more volume, and even the stats showed that. What I want to ask is this. The one big weapon he had was the big kick to the head with his right, using his right leg. A lot of them, it seemed like you blocked. It still made some noise. Do you think some of the judges were swayed that thinking that they were landing and impacting? Because I didn't really see you stagger at all from any of them.
Yeah, that one judge must have thought that they were making a bigger impact than what they were. I don't know who that judge was that gave him a 30-27 or what fight they were watching or even if they have any knowledge of the sport itself. But, they were making a little noise, but, you know, that chunk because he was, you know, slamming his shin right into my forearm. But, you know, no damage was taken by him. They weren't really powerful. And like I said, he just threw one kick. He didn't follow up with anything. And that's not going to win you a fight these days.
Mm-hmm. In round two, he had taken your back and had gotten, you know, he was trying to choke you out. He was trying to do the rear naked choke on you. At one point, it seemed like it was getting close. How close was it?
It was tight. You know, when he got me, it was real tight. I'm not going to lie about that. You know, you guys know I'm a realist in every situation, man. And, you know, when he took me back down in the ground, that's when it got really tight. I think you could see some spit. Like, shoot up out of my mouth, and I'm like, shit, I really need to get control of his wrist and get out of here because I can't go out like this again. I just can't. You know? Like, it's just going to be too embarrassing, you know. And, I just pulled through it, and he put a lot of pressure on my back. And, you know, Andre's, he's a good fighter. He's definitely grown as in the aspect of being a better fighter than what he initially was. He's gotten better. you can tell that, you know, he's been putting in work, you know, so I just really needed to stay composed, really remember what my coaches have been, you know, teaching me, you know, leading up to this in my training, and get out and reverse it.
I'm glad I prefaced it by telling him to keep it 100, because that was some raw honesty right there, you know?
I was scared when he said that, because I thought, when does Michael not keep it 100? He's going to slap the shit out
of
George.
Right?
Exactly. All right, so Michael, now my last question, then I'll turn it over to the guys. Would you say that anybody that may have called it 10-9 for him was maybe on point? Now, I know that with over a minute left, you got out of it, and you got some ground and pound. But, again, from my end, keeping it 100, I thought it was ground and pound. I thought you scored points, but I wasn't sure if it was damaging enough for them to reverse him being closer to finishing the fight. So I thought that they could possibly score at 10-9 for Feely, and it could be 1-1 going into the third. Do you feel like that's realistic at any point, or did you feel like you won back round two?
It could be realistic. Yeah, you could see it that way. But at the same time, I felt I won because I finished the round in a dominant position, and I finished the round, you know, landing as much shots as I could. Yeah, he did take my back, but before he got that takedown and got on my back, I was landing more. I put more pressure on him, and I was looking to get him out of there in that second round, and he just timed my left hand very well, got under it, and you can give a guy points, but if a guy's just hanging on your back or he's trying to choke you and that's all he's doing and he hasn't finished it or succeeded in it, then I don't really see where they get major points for that. But, I was definitely skeptical going into the third round, knowing, like, hey, I really need a push for this third to get the win.
Yeah. All right. Let me turn it over to the guys, and then I'll finish up my thoughts on round three. It was a great fight between Michael Johnson and Andre Feely. Johnson, of course, now we're talking to him as a featherweight. All right, John Morgan, what do you got for the Menace?
Yeah, Mike, I want to ask you, I mean, we talked a little bit about it on Saturday night, but now that you've had a chance to think about it and go back and watch the fight, I do wonder if that second round, you know, being in as bad a position as you were and battling out of it is one of those things that might have an impact on you moving forward. I mean, is that something that kind of gives you some confidence in yourself, or you feel like might, you know, give you more confidence or let you have more, you know, belief in yourself that you can battle out of those spots?
Yeah, it does, and you hit the nail on the head right there. I'm not glad that situation happened, but at the same time, I'm glad that happened because, just like you said, it shows me that, hey, I can't work out of these positions, and now I'm getting comfortable to do that in the cage to where you saw in the Darren Elkins fight, I kind of froze up a little bit. You know, even though I knew exactly what I needed to do, I still froze up. I didn't want to make mistakes, and I just wasn't comfortable moving. You know, and now coming back in my training camp, you know, we've been putting myself in a lot of bad positions to where I have to be comfortable in moving and, you know, just believing in my training and, you know, what I've been. So I'm glad that happened and moving forward. I'm ready for, anything in any position now.
Very nice. And you talk about moving forward. I mean, you said it on Saturday, hey, we're going to do another one at featherweight. But it doesn't look like you have trouble making 145. I mean, you always look to be in good spirits. It looks like you're okay. But you also never rule out the possibility of going back to lightweight as well. So how are you making that decision moving forward? I mean, is it about the matchups? Is it about the opportunities, the names, the paydays? I mean, how are you going to make the decision about which weight class you fight in moving forward?
Yeah, all of that above, you know, all the above, you know, those definitely have, factors that play into it. Like I said, money is definitely an issue, not an issue, but it's definitely like a must to want to have. But at the same time, I need to get back to enjoying the sport. I need to get back to enjoying fighting and saying, you know, F the money. You know, when I got into the sport in the beginning, it wasn't about the money. You know, it was about going in there, fighting the tougher guys and having fun and enjoying it. You know, my last few fights, you know, it was kind of about the money, and I saw those fights come up as losses, you know. So I need to put my priorities in a better space and just, you know, have fun with it. So leading into the future, I do want big fights. I want fun fights. You know, if a fun fight pops open at lightweight, I'm going to jump on it. A tough guy at 45 that's going to put me in position to make a run for the title early next year, you know, those are the fights I want, you know. So I'm not in it to fight the middle of the pack at 45 anymore. And, I want the best of the best at 45 and 55, like always.
This guy's the anti-Mickey Gall. I like that. He wants the tough fights. All right. Dan Tom, our fight analyst.
Hey,
what do you have for Michael Johnson?
hey, Michael, you were speaking with our own John Morgan here, actually, after your fight on Saturday. You're talking about your coaches and your corner, how they don't tell you if you're winning rounds or not, that, you know, you guys are, you know, you're veteran enough, you know what you got to be doing in there. Your answer was along those lines, and I found that to be a really interesting answer. Is that something that, you know, is something with you and Henry particular, or is that something that Henry does with a lot of his guys in the corners there?
You know, it's kind of one of those, like, unspoken agreements that people have, you know, especially that trainers have with their fighters, and a bond. You know, we're all in our gym on the same page, you know, with everything. So with that being said, you know, we're not going to go in here and tell our fighter that, hey, man, you won that round, because we all know that if a fighter hears that going into a very tough fight, they might take some time off in between or in the middle of the round, and that'll cause the fight to lose. You know, we've seen that many a times before. So we really want us as fighters and our coaches telling us that, hey, we need to be pushing regardless of if you think you won, regardless of if you think you lost. You know, we're not even going to bring that up. Just stick to the plan, stick to the game plan, continue the process, and, you know, continue to get the win.
I got you. And one more from me, and maybe a little more of a fun one, but we got Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Conor McGregor coming up. Now, I actually picked you to beat Khabib, which people thought I was crazy for when that matchup got announced. But even though the match didn't go your way, no, exactly. I think you showed opened a lot of people's eyes in that fight, in fact, about Khabib and possible pathways to defeating him. So I guess, in short, where do you stand on this matchup, just maybe as a fan or obviously as an experienced competitor? You know, what's your opinion on the fight?
You know what, man? I'm interested in seeing who wins, you know, and that's as far as it goes for me. You know, like, I fought Khabib, yes, you know, he got the victory. I wasn't really comfortable that fight. I was worried about a lot what he did. And, you know, Conor's Conor. He does what he does. But at the same time, I'm not really focused on these guys winning and fighting each other. You know, they're going to do their fight or whatever. I need to be focused on Michael Johnson and my mistakes I'm making and preparing, you know. So look it up until these guys fighting in the UFC and everybody fighting for titles. I don't pay attention to them anymore because they're not important to me unless I'm fighting them. You know, I just need to focus on myself to be successful.
Goes what you got for the Menace.
Michael, here in the fight capital of the world, every year they have the Boxing Hall of Fame. And one thing that's been going on for the longest time was you wouldn't really see Marvin Hagler come out here. And one of the reasons he wouldn't come out is because he said, I can't even be in the same room as Sugar Ray Leonard. And they had that epic fight. And I was curious, this past weekend, you had one of the most epic fights ever with Justin Gaethje, and now you had to kind of share a card with him. What was it like being around him? And in some fighters, they like to say that those type of fights actually create a bond. In your case, did you create a bond with him? What was it like being around him for that card?
Yeah, you know, and I actually think we did. And, we talked quite a bit that week. You know, every time I saw him, man, he came up to me right when I checked in. Started speaking to me, you know, I spoke to him, told him good luck, you know, I hope camp went well, and, you know, we actually even hung out, you know, after the fight, you know, in the hotel, you know, just talked and had a conversation. It was a group of my friends, so I think we definitely, you know, created a bond and built it. There was no hatred between me and Jason, you know, like, it was someone in the fight that maybe went a little too far, you know, on my end, but at the same time, it is what it is. You know, we went in there, and we gave each other our best, and even though I didn't come out on top, I still respect Justin as a fighter. You know, he still respects me, you know. There's not many guys like me and him left in the sport, and that's guys that are just fight the best of the best and want the tough fights. So it was good being around him, and, you know, we kind of might have gave each other a little energy in that fight, because he came in with a great victory. You know, I had to get a tough victory out, and we'll move forward.
I don't go back and forth saying he said, she said, but this is public, and Andre Feely doesn't seem to be taking this loss too well. Have you seen his comments on Instagram going so far as to call you a bitch?
He called you a bitch. Listen, lions don't concern themselves with their parents and sheep, so I don't care what the hell the little kid says. You know, he's a punk. The funny thing is, I'll make something public that nobody really knows. I'm sitting in the hotel bar in the lobby with my friends, and he, like, sneaks around me and, like, mumbles under his breath.
Wait. We can barely hear you. Can you say that again?
So he like mumbles under his breath, like, "You lost that fight, Johnson." And like I look up to see who it was to say something to him. And by the time I look up, he's halfway across the room already. I'm like, did he really just come over and say that? And then I'm thinking to myself, wow, it was just like the fight. Like, he did a little bit of nothing, and he ran away right after he did it. I was like, and he's wondering why he lost the fight. So, I mean, he's got a lot of growing up to do, man. He's running around like a little kid, throwing shit in the back. And
this caught my attention because earlier you said he was a good fighter, and so it seemed like from your end it was respectful. And I literally popped this up as we were talking. I thought, wow, Andre doesn't reciprocate, you know. Usually fighters can squash it just like you explained you and Gagey did. But I'll tell you what, this is in the past. I want to ask you one more thing because we're up against the clock. We were talking about UFC 228 in Dallas, Texas. And I know you're gangster enough to take a fight on 24-hour notice. You were here in our studio when you were fielding calls from Dana White to fight Tony Ferguson when Khabib Nurmagomedov fell off. Would you fight in 2 weeks in Dallas, Texas against Zabit Magomed Sharipov, or is it too soon?
Who is that guy? Is that the 45er?
Yeah, he's a pretty badass 45er, but he's not that well known. So actually for you to say who is it, I think a lot of viewers are still saying it, but I think a lot of people have also taken note. He's flashy. He's got a good style. He had a pretty good win in Boston recently.
I know what you're talking about. And man, if numbers play well, I mean, it wouldn't be any issues for me, you know, but 2 weeks right after a fight, you know, I'm so badass, but I have to look at some things.
Yeah. Maybe agree to 150 or something. I don't know, but I'd love to see that fight. And earlier in the interview, you said you're down to do some fun fights, and I thought that's a fun fight right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if he's down to fight, you never know. There might be something we can look into.
I know you got Dana White's number, so holler at him.
Yeah, of course. You see us. You guys play a matchmaker today.
We just like watching you fight, brother. But hey, I guess if it doesn't happen, at least we can congratulate you on this one. That was a great performance on Saturday night. Great to see you back in the win column.
Man, perfect. Thank you, man. Appreciate that, guys.
Let us know if you're back in Vegas, and we'd love to have you co-host. You always do a good job.
All right, will do, always. Love to stop by.
Okay. See you, Michael. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks to Michael Johnson and Sean O'Connell for their time. Nick Abbott, you got about 30 seconds, brother. What's up?
I'll call back tomorrow. I just want to bitch about these people that want you to line out the whole junkie gathering. The first time a bunch of us came down, we didn't know what we were doing. We were just getting together with other junkies. Have a good day. Bye.
Thank you, Nick. Thank you.
There you go.
He had like the clearest connection I've ever heard of.
Yeah. That was a great way to end
the show. I was looking around. I was like, is he in here? God?
I got a nice uplifting email as well from another junkie this morning. So, hey, same way I feel, man. Have we ever let you down? No. So, there you go. Anyway, tomorrow, Goose, you're planning the show. Chuck Liddell stopping by?
Chuck, he's not going to be in studio.
Oh, no, yeah. Kevin Lee's stopping by.
Chuck Liddell will be on the program, and James Krause.
Cool. And we're going to have another fighter from the PFL 7 card. John Morgan will be at the UFC PI. Maybe we'll see you Wednesday?
Yeah, I'll be here Wednesday.
Cool. All right. And tomorrow, you know, we'll fill in some of the other holes on this fight card in Lincoln, Nebraska. And we got to start turning the page and looking forward to Dallas, Texas as well. All right. So for John and Danny and Dan and Goes, I'm George. Have a nice day. Go out there and be a champion and go Man U.